Step into Mind Matters, where we reveal the high-stakes world of CEOs, from their first-day jitters to game-changing strategies, and equip you with invaluable insights and practical advice essential for your personal growth and leadership journey. And now, Mind Matters.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Kendall Raisler. And today, we're thrilled to have a remarkable guest join us in our podcast. He brings a wealth of knowledge as the CEO of Landcore and can't wait to delve into some insightful conversation with him. Get ready for some engaging information on this episode, and please welcome Jeff Tisdale to our show. Welcome, Jeff.
Great. Kendall, thanks for inviting me onto your podcast. I'm really excited to be here.
Fantastic. We're excited to have you. Jeff, before I delve into the conversation, I'd like to give our listeners a little bit more insight on your background. Could you please share a brief bio of yourself and some of the highlights of your journey, of your professional journey, so we can learn more about you?
Okay, well, brief is the optimal word, so we'll keep it that way. So Kendall, I've been with Landcore for, this is my lucky 13th year. The company's been around for 25, so I'm pretty happy to be part of, more than half of the life of the organization. There's been lots of changes. And prior to that, I spent, about the same amount of time in the financial services space. So I worked in the credit union system, and I was a customer of Landcore forever. And then, you kind of get that itch to try something different. And so lo and behold, I walked into an opportunity with Landcore thinking it was something. And then once you, and I'm sure you've experienced this as well, Kendall, it's sometimes when you peer behind the curtain, there's a lot more going on. And so Landcore, there's a lot of stuff, I guess that's the right technical word. There's lots of things that Landcore does beyond just the automated valuation model. I know we might talk about that down the road, but it's much more than just, like a PDF document that it puts out. So kept it brief.
That's fantastic. No, that's, Jeff, it's important when you're a technology company. Mm-hmm. And being a technology company, it's changing and always changing and evolving. And it is amazing with what we are doing in today's world, the technology, how it's worked. And what Landcore has shown me in the past and what I've looked at is amazing, the stuff that they're pulling together. But I would really like to talk about when you first started as a CEO. Can you please share me with your initial thoughts and emotions when you first took the role? What was it like, Jeff, for our listeners?
I think I'd be lying to you if I didn't say it was, you're sitting on the edge of the cliff, ready to jump off. And that's literally what it was, is just jumping off. And I'd been a manager in the past. And I think mentally, I just had to get my head around to being the same job, in terms of leading people, inspiring people, moving people along. It's just rather than manager of, I've got this, this big title, which for me is just getting past it. And still, the people that I work with haven't changed. The work I do hasn't changed. It's just really the role above me, my business card changed, put it bluntly. So it was for me to square that and just to not get overwhelmed with what I think we think CEOs do, and just try and be more of that CEO that represents who I am. And through that, just continue to try and be a decent guy to the folks I work with. And hopefully that's the case.
Well, Jeff, I think that's really important. Number one, being yourself. I think the second part is really important is when you're dealing with the people in your company. Like when you come in as a CEO, you have different thoughts, different ways you want to run the company, which means it's different for culture. Did you have any unexpected challenges with handling some of your staff with the change of culture, the way you were doing things?
The biggest change, Kendall, I think, would moving from the credit union space into Landcore. Landcore is a small business. And so you move from the credit union space where it's pretty structured and there's a lot of support, either supporting roles or supporting processes or documentation. There's lots of that stuff around you. So when you jump into a small business, you got to take off your CEO hat and you become the HR hat, or you become the negotiator or whatever. There's multiple hats you have to wear. So it's finding that confidence in each hat that you put on and just knowing that you're doing the best that you can, and you're to learn from each situation. So not to get overwhelmed, but to always, when I'm trying to make a point of always trying to circle back with folks that we have a conversation with, just to get feedback on either, was it clear? What's your perspective? Or I had a colleague of mine who's done really good training with me. She's we've worked on, you know, that to help me understand.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. So the real open door policy, where you get to listen, you actually listen to them and then come back after and make plans after, that helps quite a bit, does it, Jeff?
I think so, but it's two ways. I mean, you have to have someone who's willing to trust that the information they give to you is going to be acted on, and it's not going to be used in some sort of nefarious way. So that's key. It's a two-way street. So it's up to me to demonstrate that they can trust me. And then that's just not just in one instance. It comes over 2 or 3 or 10 or 20 interactions. So once the trust is built, and then it becomes more of the willingness to share really good information. And then once you get to that level of getting some really good information, it just enables the two of us or the team to make really good decisions.
So when you're doing that and you're building your cohesive team, right? You have your team and you're building more and more of it and motivate them. That was part of your way you'd be motivating them. What other measures did you use to build your culture with them around, so your culture was exactly what you wanted or needed?
Whew, well, that's a good question. I've been doing this for a while, Kendall, I can tell.
Well, our listeners, Jeff, and that is not an easy question. It's a very tough question to ask because our leaders that are out here and that are watching our podcast, we have some new CEOs, some mid CEOs who've been doing it for a number of years, and some that have been doing it for a long time. And each one of them has a different style and a different way of handling it. And I want all these CEOs to understand what's worked best. There's no right answer for anything. It's what's best for each person.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think with that one, I think for each person, it depends on what culture you're comfortable building or working within. And so with that, you've got to, it's hard. You have to resist kind of stepping in to course correct when too early. You have to let people learn, and by learning you have to let them fail, and when they fail you have to be there to support them. And so in doing that, it creates the like I mentioned before, it creates the trust, and it really is something that's really powerful when I'm asking our either IT director or us other sales folks or our controller about their opinion. They know that I'm sincerely interested in their opinion, because that feedback is going to help guide us on a better path. I'm not asking their opinion just because I feel they've got to tick a box. It's I look at them as my customer, and that's a little bit cliched, but I have to get good guidance from them in order to make good direction, good decisions for the business.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think a lot of people will feel the same way that you have in what you just said. Can you share a memorable success or milestone that you've achieved during your first initial period as a CEO, one that stands out in your mind?
You know, it's funny. I remember kind of getting this role the first time and talking to a fellow at a credit union who's been in this position for a long, long time. I knew of him for a long time and had a lot of respect for him. And for him, when the announcement was made, then he had called me and said to me, you know, now that we're peers, you know, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
And for me, I really thought about that, because I was, wow, like, I guess so. I guess we're, like, at least from business card perspective, we're peers, but I've got a long way to go to catch up to you in terms of, you know, your expertise and your knowledge as a CEO. But that was, for me, that was the first aha moment where it's, okay, this is for real. And this is, you know, I've got more expectations on myself to be a different leader than a manager. And so it's a journey I'm still on to kind of get better at that.
I think that's an ever-evolving journey, because I believe that, you know, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves, and CEOs put a lot of pressure on themselves. They got to do everything. They got to know everything. They got to have the right people. They got all these plates that they're spinning in order to make everything happen. What advice would you give a newer CEO on the pressures he's putting on himself? How did you handle to tame that lion down that you're putting onto your own shoulders?
Yeah, you know, Kendall, I've thought about that quite a bit, actually. And for me, it was maybe it's just age, where you get to that point where the little things that used to kind of really knot you, and you worried about what other people thought about and all those other things, which, you know, might be important to how you're perceiving something, but really in the grand scheme of things, maybe that's not even on the radar, but just sort of being comfortable in your own skin, being confident in the decisions you've made, because it's always coming from the right place. And then just moving forward and just moving forward, knowing that, you know, if you make a mistake, so be it. So how do we continue moving forward? So, and not getting hung up on, you know, I failed. I'm going to like always looking backwards and feeling bad about failing instead of pivoting on the failing and looking at it as, okay, so we won't, first of all, we won't do that again. And secondly, what did we learn from it? And then how's this going to help me? And then how am I going to use this to help other managers below me that I'm going to give them some perspective on something that maybe they don't have yet. And that's the challenge too, as I mentioned earlier, is you want folks to learn, you know, and kind of you're going to hold their hand, learn through failing. So it's important for folks, I think, to fail to some degree because that's where the best learning comes from. So I guess that's kind of a roundabout way to answer your question. Hopefully I've landed on the spot.
You're doing fantastic, Jeff. You know, there's a saying that my father used to have to me when I was 14 years old. He told me, the older you get, the less you'll know. Yeah. And I laughed at him and said, you know way more than I do, even at 14 when you had all the answers, right? But as you've gone through the journey, and that statement that my father used to use makes a lot of sense. And we learn from our past, we learn from the mistakes, and we build on from them. And a lot of mistakes and challenges that a lot of CEOs have is a life-work balance. How do you spin that many plates? Meanwhile, have your personal life working. How did you handle that? How did you keep that into a area that was manageable and that was allowed you to be able to be the best in each one of those sectors?
Yeah, I think that's ongoing work for me specifically. And it's something I say to my staff about making sure they take time to, you know, push away from the desk. And I think that's a challenge for everybody working from home, is that it's just so easy to, I mean, yeah, sure, you get lots of work done, but that comes at a cost, and you're tired, or you're not, you know, longer term, you're not the best employee that you can be. So, and I do know, like, work is sort of like a, you know, like a bit of a up and down, where you're going to have periods of time where there's tons and tons of work, which is good. I mean, thank goodness I got this problem where there's lots of work. Thank goodness. But then there's also moments where it's going to ease up a bit, and it's taking advantage of those moments where it's easing up, where you're going to, you know, take some of your time back and head out for a walk or a bike ride or spend time with your spouse or kids or whatever. But the point is, make sure that you recognize when there's that bit of slack and you take time for yourself to use it for personal things. And that, I think that helps with mental health. It helps with, you know, much better employees, much better leaders going forward.
I think it does as well, because it calms everybody down. When you're always going hard, a person tends to get more anxious, and that just run through all the ranks of your people. Which brings me to scaling, Jeff. Scaling companies. You know, every CEO wants to build and scale and go through, and some companies only have a certain growth pattern that they want to do. Some want to be the biggest in the world, right? What strategies have you employed to scale your organization, whether expanding geographically to grow or in terms of services or products?
Yeah, so Landcore is kind of unique that, so we don't have a board per se. I've got an owner of the business. We're privately held. So the owner of the company, he's my board. So we talk about how much he wants to grow or not grow his business. And even though we only operate in BC, there's a lot of depth. If we stay in BC till the end of time, there's lots of depth within our clients to work in. And I think that's the balance too, is what are you growing for? You know, is it growing to grow, to get, you know, financial rewards, which, I mean, of course that's good, but then how sustainable is it? Or is it to grow financial rewards, but you're growing deep and you become, and again, it's cliche, but being that trusted advisor. So we've got tons of clients that I like to think we work with who haven't so far call blocked me, which is a good sign. You know, they take my emails. I like to think that we've been able to move the relationship beyond a transaction, and it's they trust what I'm advising them, and what I'm hearing back from them is sincere in terms of whether they've got capacity or not to do work. And that's the kind of business I like to grow, is the deep business as opposed to the broad business.
This episode is powered by Onist AI. Onist's optimized onboarding process and minimized documentation result in an expedited and seamless financing journey for clients, enhancing their contentment and commitment. through identity verification, financial data validation, and creditworthiness assessment. Our software empowers companies to make well-informed financing choices, bolster application speed and customer uptake by 30%, and cut operational costs by a significant 70% with Onist AI. For more information, visit onist.ai.
When it comes to expanding the services and products, how do you ensure that your offering is aligning and evolving with the needs of your customers and members?
Yes, that's a challenge we have. Like being a technology / data company, we can pivot our data in many different ways and serve many, many different customers. But to properly look after our customers, it comes with a certain level of expertise. And so there's for sure segments I'd like to pursue. I know we don't have the expertise to pursue these segments, and that, you know, it's all about, I think, first impressions. And if we get off on the wrong foot with a key segment because we don't have the right people, then it makes it harder for that brand to move into those segments once we get the good people, because we've kind of done a bad job setting up expectations. So I think it's the right people, because with the right people brings credibility, because they can speak the language, they understand what's hiding around the corners, and then they're able to understand how our services can be pivoted within, or to solve the customer's problems, I guess is a better way of saying it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, when you talk about the right people, that brings up the question, how do you approach the right talent to acquisition the right talent? Like to bring the right people. What is your process for approaching to get the right people?
We're kind of going through that right now with some folks, and we know for sure, like from a skill set perspective, what we need in people to be able to do certain things. We definitely need smarter people than me to do all the advanced mathematics and the stats, et cetera, et cetera. But when I was mentioning about working with our customers and going deep with our customers, I think that also lends itself to having some of our customers feel intrigued about what we're all about, and almost envisioning themselves about, you know, if there's something at Landcore, I would like to join Landcore because of their interaction they've had with us personally. And so when we've gone more so on the business side, we've gone to attract folks. Certainly we put the posting out, but we had a lot of our customers actually that knock on our doors to come and work for us. So because they know about the business, and that's good, because we're still bringing in people with the expertise, and they come in with already their own sort of set of folks that they're connected with. And I think at the end of the day, that's really the kind of business I want to grow, is the connections, the relationships, and the product is just a sort of like the end of that conversation. But you don't get to that product without the trust and without the conversations and the relationships that we have with each other.
Well, that'll also help on your work-life balance, because you're dealing with the people that you like. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with that. It's easier. We've all had to deal with businesses with people who wouldn't be called our favorites, and it makes it difficult if you have to deal with them on a daily basis. So that makes a lot of sense. As a CEO that's been 5 years in the business, you know, there's a lot of challenges that are different between the CEO that just started yesterday. So what would you say the greatest challenges in your scaling between the 5-year period and the first year period?
Yeah, when I first think of Kendall's, the advice your dad gave you is, you know, the more, like the older you are, the more you're in the role, the more that you realize you don't know. And that is so true, you know? So you're thinking, I mean, when you get into the role, you have, I think, this perception of what it's supposed to be, or what you're supposed to be. And then as you kind of move along through it, whether you're CEO or whether you're a manager or, you know, even an owner, like you become more broadly aware of those things. And then you start to realize, whoa, like, okay, I don't know as much as I thought I knew, and I need certain people, I need certain skills. And you kind of become more, I think, more conscious of what it takes to be successful.
Well, I have one more question for you, Jeff. And it's about technology. Being in a technology company, technology is changing very, very fast. We have AI coming online, and I use that word very loosely because there's a lot of different things put onto that name. But there's expansions happening, a whole bunch of companies popping up and moving all over, coming into it. And when I look at the technology companies And then I ask you as a CEO of a technology company, I want to ask you this one final question. Okay. If you were on year 25 as a CEO instead of year 13, what do you foresee as a CEO changing compared to what you're on year this year?
Well, for sure, I'm seeing it now with some of the new hires we're bringing in, like the expectations of the 20-somethings, for example, from a people perspective, is in terms of the questions and the expectations I feel I'm getting from them versus the expectations I have as a Gen X to my boss, who's a silent generation, different. So I've got to, and I understand where they're coming from and the questions they ask and why they're asking questions. And I was to take those questions and take on that persona and ask it up to, you know, my boss who's in his 80s. That just wouldn't fly. It's just the conversation gap is way too big. So it's sort of a decoupling from, I guess, the traditional, you know, CEO manager relationship with subordinates to it's in a kind of a weird way. It's almost like a partnership, you know. They're not like perhaps you know, your dad or my dad, where they worked at the same company for 30 years or 40 years, and that was because they got the pension. It was these people that are coming in to help drive our business have choices, and choices that we never had, you know. Like, so I'm working from home, which is great as somebody who's in his over 35 segment, let's just say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and these kids, like, this is new, and I love it because of the work-life balance it brings. But these kids, this is normal for them, or I shouldn't say kids, but I mean these people in their 20s and 30s, this is normal. So what's stopping them from, you know, if this isn't working, they're not constrained to Calgary or Vancouver. They can go and work globally. And that puts such a, and if you get that really good person, which is critical to your business, beyond the expertise, but because they've got just something intangible that just really adds a ton of value to the business. You know, when they leave, it's hard to replace that person, but that's just going to be the challenge as we kind of move through that. We've got to be more, I'm going to say accommodating is the wrong word, but we just have to be more sensitive to, you know, that relationship that isn't as firm as maybe we were used to when we were 20, kind of working for, you know, the bosses back then. It was pretty rigid. Nowadays, it's pretty informal. It's pretty flexible.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for that answer and for joining us today on our podcast and sharing your insights. I really appreciate every moment I get to speak with you. And I think our listeners will have a lot of information and takeaways from this in order to help them grow and get more expertise. So once again, thank you very much, Jeff, for your time. And I really appreciate you joining us in our podcast today.
Great, Kendall. You know, thanks to you as well. And this is fantastic. You create a forum for a conversation for people to get information from a variety of your guests. So I'm just happy to be a part of that. So thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thanks for listening. If you found this conversation valuable, please leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We will see you next time on Mind Matters.